Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salomon. For the next couple of hours, we're going to be talking about car stuff, and you're welcome to join us like Tyler has. He called in early, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and I'm going to take Tyler because he's first. Good morning, Tyler.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
You know, I'm good. I've been better, but I'm still good.
Well, that's good to hear. So I just bought a 1979 K10. And unfortunately, it got robbed less than 48 hours after owning it because the back window does not have a locking latch. So I'm looking to put a kill switch and some type of alarm system, and just wondering if you had any suggestions on the best way to protect your pickup.
Let me just think out loud here. I'm pretty sure most of us can bypass an alarm system. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And there's the problem is that I doubt if guys in their 40s, 50s, and 60s are stealing cars. So it's not likely. The younger people, I would imagine, would probably be fooled by a lot of things. I'm a real fan of a secret switch, something that disables the power to something. We could disable the starter. We can disable oil pressure switch to let it believe that it has no oil. We can bypass or take the power or the ground off the distributor. We can do lots of different things to disable it with some kind of a hidden switch. I'm going to tell you a place that's just absolutely perfect that we've been using for 100 years, except I'm not going to tell you on the air. I want you to send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, and tell me what time you called in, because I know exactly what time you called in, and then I'll know it's you, and I will share with you what I've done on a lot of my old vehicles that worked pretty well.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
All righty. Well, good luck to you, Tyler. Thanks for calling. Alrighty, Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. Family and owned and operated since 1982. Chuck opened the shop, and his son, Derek, I'll get this right, Derek runs the shop, and as with most of us, the second generation does a better job than the first generation. Because they had good mentors, is what I like to say. But nevertheless, the staff and the technicians are not paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bill. Derek, therefore, can assure you they're not going to sell you unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're looking for a great shop in Sun City, Auto Dynamics is on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. I get a lot of email, and one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about today was, I can't for the life of me understand why so many people are so worried about their security and about their data on the internet and where they were born and what their date of birth is and what their social security number is and all that kind of stuff. We're all concerned with holding close all of our important data and not sharing it. Yet a lot of you are plugging this little device in underneath the left side of your dash because your insurance company says to you, if you'll let us watch you for a little bit of time, then we will model your premiums, is the word I should use. We'll model your premiums about the way that you drive. And so you're not concerned about this data. I just don't understand that. Here's the deal. If you're a good driver, then the answer to this data capturing device is this. I have not had a claim or an accident in 10 years. You better already be giving me the best rate. So protect your privacy and those, as well as your stereo and entertainment system where you can talk to it and it talks back to you. It used to be that the very first one that came out was, you know, we're going to see your airbag deployed. We're going to send you help. We're going to talk to you and all of these other benefits. If your car is stolen, we're going to bring it to a stop slowly after the police have surrounded the vehicle. And we're going to kill the engine. And then we're going to he'll pull off to the side of the road. He'll get out with his hands up, and that's it. None of that is true. None of that is true. It takes an act of God for one of those companies to shut down your car. I get that from policemen who have tried. And there's a situation of liability. So the bad guy's driving your car and he's doing 80 miles an hour and they shut the engine off. Okay, well, they shut the engine off, and after one or two brake applications, he'll have non-power brakes and it'll be a rock hard brake pedal, and he's trying to bring the car to a stop. But he's having a really tough time because there's policemen around him, front and back. And so he's pressing on the brakes, and he's not really making it. All of a sudden, there's a hazard in front of me. There's somebody in front of him. Boom, he hits him. And maybe he wouldn't have hit him if they hadn't killed the engine, which killed his power steering and his brakes. So we have all of those moving parts out there. And don't be foolish enough to question the validity of that data, because you can just get on the internet and figure that out. There's people out there that are raising their hands. So I am not a fan of displaying my private information to anybody. I'm really cautious about that. I think many of you are as well. I just want to reiterate that it's foolish for you to think there's anything good about you giving someone the data on your driving habits. And here's the number one reason. Who are they comparing it to? Grandma Moses at 92? Of course, there's probably a couple grandmas out there that are laughing at me right now saying I drive worse than a 16-year-old. But the idea is where's the comparison? Who are they comparing it to? Where's the line that they're using? And where were you? If the line was 50 and you were at 25, or if the line was 50 and you went from 25 to 49, I mean, none of that information is good. None of it. So it's kind of like, I'll give you an example. My business, we carry a lot of business liability. We protect your car in case we damage it. We protect your car in case the whole building collapses in a fire. We do everything. And we just renewed it. And they dropped the premium a little bit. And my daughter, Andy, said to Britt, you know, what happened? And he goes, well, you haven't had a claim in 10 years. And we were grateful for the deduction in our premium, which is thousands of dollars a month. But by the same token, we're thinking, it took them 10 years to give us the discount? I mean, that's a long time. And one of the things is that I carry kind of a high deductible. So I'm not going to report the small $1,000, $2,000, maybe even $5,000, maybe even more. Those kinds of claims that don't involve bodily injury, we're just going to fix them. We're just going to fix them or pay to have them fixed. So there's all these moving parts. I don't care what you do. I just want to give you my viewpoint on why you should be careful sharing that data. Because, like I said, you don't know what they're going to do with it, and you certainly don't know if where you at in relationship to all the other people that have this little Wi-Fi device that's going to talk to them. And they're going to plug it in, and they're going to know everything about you. They're going to know your throttle pressure. They're going to know your steering. They're going to know your speed, your RPM, your braking. They're going to know how many times your ABS was activated, which means a panic stop. They're going to know how many times you turned the steering wheel hard right and braked hard right, which means you're trying to avoid a hazard, or you just missed the liquor store. I don't know. But the idea is, and I'll give you something else, you're going to say, oh, Mark, that's self-serving. And you're right. You're right. We bought some moldings for the sunroof of my wife's car. And shortly after that, she got notes from the manufacturer of her car. And they say, we're real local, and we're your friendly da-da-da dealer, and we want you to know that we are best qualified to repair your car. And I'm going, wow, how did they know? Well, this answer is easy. For a long time, the car dealers have been asking guys like me when we call in, and admittedly, it's better. They say, give me the VIN number of the car. So we give them the VIN number. And then that gives them year, make, model. It gives them everything. They pipe in the VIN number, and they look at the trim stuff, and then they look for moldings in the sunroof, and they give them. But we gave them your VIN number. Now they know you. So we gave them the VIN number. Now they're going to market to you because they know that you're in their area, because my shop is in their area. So they begin to market. Not too long ago, a friend of mine who's a judge got a postcard in the mail and said, it said, we've noticed that you're in the area, and we noticed that you, last time your car was in, it had this many miles, and we wanted you to know that people with your kind of car, with your kind of mileage, will benefit from the following two service items. One, flush your injectors, and two, flush your fuel tank. You have no idea how wadded up my underwear was. Flushing the fuel tank? God almighty, for what? Why? The only time we ever flush the fuel tank is if a contamination occurs. Water, oil, diesel fuel, gas and diesels, diesels and gas. The kid in the neighborhood sticks the garden hose in your fuel tank. That's the only time. I have never, in 40 years of working on cars, ever flushed a fuel tank for any reason whatsoever, unless it's a fuel contamination issue. Never, never.
1 minute.
And as far as flushing your fuel injectors, folks, I can't tell you what a lucrative business it is for us to flush your intake and flush your fuel injectors and flush the back of your intake valves and flush your engine and flush your transmission. You have no idea how lucrative that is. Here's the problem with all of that. There are times symptoms necessitate that. So if we think the fluid in your 120,000-mile transmission might be suspect, we'll flush it all out and put new fluid in. You'll know that. Most of us will tell you, this is a guess. We want to see better, worse, or the same. So there's lots of times we'll do that. Sometimes the engine miss you have is intermittent. So my shop will flush your fuel injectors, and then we say to you, better, worse, or the same. Now, it's going to be better, and they're going to say, doesn't happen anymore. Good. We guessed right. They're going to say, no, it's the same, and then it's rarely going to get worse, as you can imagine. Those are the kinds of dynamics, but it is what it is. I'm not king of the world. I'm not even king of the address I live in. You'd have to talk to my wife, Renee, but 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you about nitrogen in your tires of your car, and we're going to discuss how really great that idea is. We'll be back. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. If you'd like to join the conversation, or if you'd like to talk about a car question, or if you want me to settle a dispute between you and your husband or you and your wife, then 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. The only shop in Mesa that I can recommend to you is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They've been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma own it, and they're on site most every day. They've been doing great work to light trucks and cars in the Mesa area for many years, and their families go back to the 60s and the 70s. So they've been in Mesa a very long time. And the name Vivian and the name Thompson, most of you would recognize one of those names. Nevertheless, they're on Apache Boulevard, just east of Stapley, Main Street, just east of Stapley. So if you live in that area, or really anywhere in Mesa, if you want my advice, then you would go to Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing and let Brian and Thelma help you take care of your car. I'm going to get to the car in just a second. Nitrogen. Okay. A lot of you drive around with the green caps on your valve stems. That says, don't put anything but nitrogen in here. I want you to hold out the palm of your hand. Before we do that, it's true that they put nitrogen in airplanes. But airplanes weigh, what, 20, 30, 40 tons? They land at hundreds of miles an hour. So, yeah, maybe so. Does your wife or your husband drive your car like they do in NASCAR? They use nitrogen. Are they doing 120, 130, 140 miles an hour? Is your wife doing that? I doubt it. Is your husband doing that? I doubt it. The idea between nitrogen is a profit center. And in your hand, in the palm of your hand right now, is 78 or 79% nitrogen. So your tires already have almost 80% nitrogen. And the most they're going to move you to is 93 or 94. Here's why. If you were to take a tire and take all the air out of it, it still has air. So if you put in nitrogen, and we don't know what the blend is, if you put it in, you're going to enhance it by a few points. If you took an inner tube and you flattened it all out and you rolled it up really, really tight, and then you put nitrogen in it after you've just exhausted the last bit of air inside that inner tube, you'd probably do better. But we can't do that to your tire. We can't roll your tire up. We can't remove all the air. So this whole thing about nitrogen is, there's two reasons. Number one, we're going to sell you that we care about you, we love you, we're trying to protect you from a tire failure. That's BS. Number two, it allows us an RCO. Actually, it's RSO. Yeah, RSO. Sorry, I was looking at it. Reoccurring sales opportunity. So you're going to come to us for your oil change to check my nitrogen. And you're going to come to us for a lot of other things because you want us to check your nitrogen. Oh, I just had a new tire put on. Would you check my nitrogen? That's all it is. You can do what you want. I'm not selling nitrogen. You already got 78, 79% in your tires. You're not landing. You're not overloading the car. And even if you were, I wouldn't care. The idea is that this is an opportunity for us to do, my industry, to do and sell you on something that you don't really need. So let's go to the phones. Who we got first, Gil?
We have Jeff.
Jack?
Hello.
Hi, Jack. How can I help you?
It's Jeff.
Hey, I have a 2018 Chevy Silverado half ton. It's got the 4.3 liter EagleTech V6 with the cylinder drop. It goes from 6 to 4, 6 to 4, like that. When I'm sitting idling, I'm getting a slight vibration. It's that kind of vibration that feels like the engine wants to die,
okay.
But there's no RPM drop. There's no RPM change. It just feels like that. I don't know if it does it when it's driving, but I can feel it when it stops, like at a red light.
Okay.
Chevy says they know about that and they can't do anything about it.
Okay. Well, I have a couple of things. Number one, when it's happening, I want you to close your eyes. First of all, I want you to do this in the parking lot of Abash's, okay? Just pull off the road. So you pull off the road, you come to a stop, close your eyes, concentrate on the vibration. It's still in drive. Then I want you to pop it up into neutral, close your eyes, feel the vibration. Pop it up into park, close your eyes, feel the vibration.
Yeah, I've done that, and most of the time it's still there. Now, there are times when I stop, and it's not there at all.
Okay. How many miles
are
on?
Other times, I use it for transfer, so it's 67,800.
Okay. Did they say anything to you about what the problem was? Are they doing with fuel delivery, too much air? What are they saying?
They're just saying, well, I talked to the guy in service, the advisor. He says that Chevy's aware of it, but they just say that they can't fix it.
Okay.
And that he didn't say anything else. And I thought that was really not a good thing for customer service to have a problem like that you can't fix.
Okay. And I'm going to say two things. Number one, I agree with you. That's really not good customer service. Number two, here's why. Now, here's what's happening. The person on the service drive is a salesperson. Their job is to write down what you say and hand it to the shop foreman, who hands it to the dispatcher, who then hands it to the technician, whoever's standing in front of him. So they don't know anything about technical stuff. They don't have a clue as to what they're saying half the time. But if the first service writer heard the second one do it, then he's going to do it. So none. But I need, you know, let's do some more testing. Does it change hot to cold? That's something you need to answer. The second thing is run the air conditioning on and off, because see, the air conditioning will add a load from the compressor, but it'll also dial the idle up just a little bit. So the question is if we add 50 or 100 RPM to this, how does it feel now?
Right now, that brings up something else. When I turn on the AC and feel the compressor come on, it does improve some.
Okay, that would indicate that the idle itself, if we add 50 to it, maybe, or something like that. Now, there is no screw for that. Don't misunderstand. There's nothing. Please, don't get your screwdriver and start doing stuff. We have to synchronize three things. We have to synchronize the air idle control motor, and then we have to synchronize the TPS, and then we have to synchronize the RPM. So there is a window there where we can kind of play with that. And if we go too far, we turn on the check engine light. Okay, we'll go back. But I want to tell you, you're telling me something I have never heard before. Telling me something that if, in fact, it was true, they would have specifics. The intake manifold's causing this problem, and they're redesigning the intake manifold. Or this is a fuel delivery problem, blah, blah, blah. So the fact that Chevy knows about it and they're working on it, that doesn't really help you.
Yeah. Right. And, in fact, I understand in the old 19 models, it's not there.
Well, you did a good job in checking the motor mounts because that's the first test we talked about. The second one is yeah, another thing you can do is do you have a tachometer in the truck?
I don't. Yeah, I do.
Okay. You know, you pull up to an intersection, and I know this is kind of hard, but just gently bring the RPMs up 50 or 100 RPM. Close your eyes. What do we do? Did that extra RPM do something for you? So I'm pretty sure you find some gray-haired guy in town that says, you know what, let me check the window out here and let me see if I can give you another. And he's going to put it in drive and look at it, and he's going to look at his scanner, and the RPM is 600, and he's going to try to make it 650, or probably at the beginning. And that's, of course, in drive. And then he's going to say better, worse, or the same. So that's how it works.
You know, I asked the Chevy dealership to do that, to can we up the RPM. They won't do that because they said the RPM at 500 is where it's supposed to be.
Okay.
So he said if we up it and it fixes the problem, fine. But he said that's not where the RPM is supposed to be. I hate it because dealers are so stiff.
Okay. All right. Yeah, and stay right there because I'm up against a break, and we'll talk about that kind of comment that it's supposed to be at 500. We're going to leave it there at 500. Okay. This isn't true. We'll be back in a minute. You know, there's another shop in town that has an owner who is a lot like me. That's Tom Blackwell. People say that we are twin brothers of different mothers. And I think it's fair to say that both of us know slightly, we're higher than the average bear with respect to cars and car repair. But he's at 40th and Greenway, and I'm way south. So he's a good guy. If you live anywhere in that northeast Scottsdale area, he's the only shop I can recommend because, number one, I have a cell phone number, as I do all the other shops. Number two, I can call him up and say, you messed up. And he'll say, I know. Or he'll say, no, let's talk about it, which is what I say to him. But he's a good guy. He has a good staff. He's been around a long time. So that's Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. Okay, we were talking to Jeff. And, Jeff, I called you Jack, and I'm sorry for that, but I have a couple comments about what you said. They talked about the Idless 500. Ask him what the idle is at cold, when the engine cold. Ask him what the if the idle changes when you go to Mount Everest or to Pikes Peak. Ask him what the idle is when the air conditioning's on or off, or the steering is turned right or turned left. You're talking to somebody who throws stuff on the table throws crap on the wall and hopes that it sticks, or they're regurgitating something that they've heard. But from a technical point of view, the idea that it has to run at 500 is so silly, I feel bad about bringing it up. The second issue is when you look at this big issue with, then you're going to get somebody say, well, it changes the emissions. Look, we're not going to change the emissions by raising it 50 RPM. Come on. And if we do, the catalytic converter should take care of that. It's a well-known fact that you can wrap your lips around a clean, hot vehicle that's made north of 2015, and you'll probably die of starvation before you die of asphyxiation. And, of course, I'm making a stupid statement, but there's an idea I want to put in your head that if you lock yourself in your garage, you better take a sandwich because it might take a while. So when we look at all of those kinds of things, the only thing I tell you is just bring the throttle up a little bit and see what happens. And then if you want to try something, then try. Another thing is go in and tell them this is what's going on, and they're going to get it in writing. They're going to give it to you in writing, whatever the answer is. Then you take it in again and again. Now, you've got two or three work orders with this very specific problem. And if I do this, it seems to go away or it changes it for the better. So 3 or 4 years from now, they come out with this and they go, I'm sorry, Jeff, you're out of warranty. And you go, no, no, no. Here's 3 work orders that says I had this problem when I was in warranty.
Right.
And I got a transmission one time from a dealership for that exact same thing. So I've learned my lesson. And in reality, it was done in just such a nice way. Mark, we know you had this, and we're going to put a transmission in your Suburban, and blah, blah, blah. And I was very grateful.
Okay.
So that's what the advice I got.
Okay, I have this one more quickie. Do you know much about the famous GM cylinder drop engines that go from 8 to 4 and 6 to 4?
Yes.
I understand that not all, but a lot of vehicles have problems with that around 100,000 miles with the camshaft.
Yeah, I want to tell you, when you say camshaft or crankshaft sensor, we put in those a lot, and there's no pattern failure there. It's just is what it is. Now, there's a Ford Triton motor that seems to be a little bit in front of everybody else, but I would certainly not want you to take away from our conversation that I agree with any kind of a known pattern failure from a cam or a crankshaft sensor, because I don't. So,
okay.
All righty.
I know back when they started that design, I think both Ford and Dodge predicted that Chevy would have trouble with that engine. And it kind of seems like they were right.
Well, I don't even agree that they're right. People were really concerned that whether the starter would wear out. They were really concerned on whether that additional power that we're using off the battery every time we hit a red light. None of that is true. Those were valid concerns, but that's not the thing today. That's just not the thing today. So if my brother, the one I love, not the one I don't, but I love my brothers, but if my brother Ralph called and said, hey, what do you think about the 468? I said, take it. You're out in Maricopa, blah, 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 and you're going to get it. And besides, most of them have some kind of a bypass, and you can keep it running all the time. It's just a matter of flipping the switch each time or some other variable. But no, I don't agree with either one of those things. I'm not necessarily a fan of the 468, but I'm saying those that have them seem to like them. So, got to run. Harry, you're up. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, you're a little wound up this morning.
You know what? It's I'm sorry. I am, though. I am.
I love it. Hey, I was when you were talking about the deal where if law enforcement is in pursuit of a vehicle and, you know, they can't get them to shut the vehicle down, why don't the manufacturers have that instead of being able to shut it down just to be able to put the transmission in neutral? The engine's still running. They'd still have all the, you know, brake and steering, but they're not going to be going any faster.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I think any time you take the brakes or you control the brakes or the throttle or the steering or the RPMs of the engine, I think there's a risk. So I agree that there's a risk. But they should have thought of that before they put the OnStar in all the GMs.
Right.
They should have thought of that earlier. I was in a convention a long time ago, and there was some couple of guys up there telling everybody about OnStar and stuff, and the policemen just were going crazy. I tried to get them to stop a chase, and they wouldn't do it. They wanted a court order. They wanted to know what the guy was wearing and if he had Levi's on or Wranglers and blah, blah, blah. And they just beat this guy up something fierce. And this was law enforcement who had the experience of trying to do that. And frankly, I've that's a conversation that comes up, Harry, and I've never met any. If anybody has ever seen that, had firsthand knowledge that has happened on any of those extraterrestrial links that you have to your car, let me know. That's it. Harry?
Well, I know you've talked about in the past about if you get a runaway on your vehicle, the throttle sticks or whatever, just slipped into neutral and, you know.
Pull off to the side of the road.
The engine's not going to blow up. It's going to hit the rev limiter. And, you know,
that's it.
That's it.
And, you know, that's something that my industry didn't think of at the very beginning. Everybody was concerned about the cause. The fact of the matter is that I didn't make that up. Somebody else made it up, and I thought it was just great. Throw it in the neutral, pull off the side of the road. The computer's not going to let the blow car. And even if the computer lets the engine blow up, that's okay. It's better than you hitting a bus full of kids, or it's better than you running over Grandma Moses, all those other things. So, Harry, thank you very much. And, Richard, you stay right there, because when I get back from the break, I'll take care of you. Forty-five minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. You want to join, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The name of this show is really self-defense for car expense, okay? self-defense for car expense. That's the reason why when somebody at the dealership or at any shop says to you, we're working on it, but I don't know what it is, and General Motors is coming out with something, and they're working on it, Ford's working on it, Toyota's working on it, then you say to them, oh, you must see that a lot, and they'll say yes. That begins your letter to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. On this date, at this time, I talked to Mark Salem, and I have this car with this VIN number, and I've got this problem, and he says they don't know how to fix it, and Chevrolet's working on it, and he says that they see it all the time. That'll cause problems. Number two, we were talking about VIN numbers on parts. Most of us in the industry now, when we call in for a part for your car, we know they're taking that VIN number we give them and they're marketing to you. We object to that. I object to that. So what we're doing is we're scrambling the last six digits of the VIN, which is really the sequence number. So that postcard that was supposed to go to my wife now goes to a guy in North Dakota. And I don't care. The first 11 of the VIN are the most important numbers. After that, no one cares. So that's what Salem Boys is doing to protect my customers from that kind of stuff. And I think that they deserve not to be put on someone's list. I don't have the authority to put you on someone's list. And so that's my way to counteract that. Last, nitrogen. We talked about nitrogen. 79% in the palm of your hand right now. If they fancy up your tires, then you're going to be 92, 93%. It isn't worth it. This is another scam like the PCV valve scams in the 70s. So, been there, done that. Let's go to the phones. Richard, how can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Thank you for taking my call.
You what?
I have a 1978 Chevy van, and I've got two questions. One of them deals with park. I've got a driveway with just a slight incline from the house down to the street. And when I pull in and put it in park and take my foot off the brake and shut off the engine, it'll roll back a little bit. One of two scenarios will happen. One of them is now I can't get it out of park, or it'll feel like it's slipping cogs and makes a terrible sound and feel.
Yes, yes. You're absolutely right, especially on a 78 that's been around the earth a couple of times. So that's an easy fix. Yeah. It's just it's change of your habit. You pull up, you're still in drive. You apply the parking brake hard, let go of the brake. The van will settle, put it in park, shut it off, and the next mm-hmm. time you get in, you stick your key in, put it in reverse, release your parking brake, and move backwards. I can't fix it any other way because your incline creates the problem. But that's all you have to do. The key there is you pull up, park where you want, you apply the parking brake, then you put it in neutral and let the van settle, and then put it into park and take your key out. That's how you fix it. But I know the sound you're making. I know that that's a problem in a lot of cars, especially with driveways, but that's the only fix I need, the only fix I know about, and I think that's a very valid one. It's just a change of habit for you. Does that work?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I told my wife to do. And
wait a minute.
I was just wondering if it's something in
the wait a minute, Richard. I don't do
transmission.
Richard, I don't do husband and wife stuff. And Richard, I think you're wrong because I'm siding with her. I don't know what she said, okay. But I'm siding with her. I'm kidding you, of course. But I don't you dare say that Mark Salem says you need to do this. You say I talked to Mark Salem, and he suggested this is how we fix that. And let me take your van for a week, and let me try that as I park it. And if it works, then maybe you can do that. How many years you been married, Richard?
No. 33.
Okay. I'm just teasing you, Richard. Thank you for your call, and thank you for laughing with me. But go ahead.
Yeah, that's the solution I told her to do. I just wondered if there was something wrong with the transmission, or linkage adjustment or something like that.
No. The fact that it rolls backward and kind of locks up your shifter means that it has engaged in park. And then what happens is when you go to, you've already loaded it, so the nose is up, the butt's down, and so when you pull it out of park, there's going to be a big, heavy clunk or ratchet. Just for what? 2 inches? And that's it. So, anyway, Richard, that's a great question. Thank you. Thank you very much. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Last week, my wife told me whenever she turned the fan on her 2015 Equinox, she heard a ticking noise. So So I heard it. It was pretty loud, tick, tick, tick. So I went to the auto parts store, and I got a new blower fan. And I looked on YouTube, so I took the fan out. And there was a pack rat inside her blower fan. And the tail was sticking out of the fan blade. So the tail was going around, tick, 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 every time she turned the blower on.
You know,
you probably see that all the time, huh?
Well, you know what we
animals
did see?
Crawl up in engines and stuff.
We saw the other day. And actually, if you're on Instagram, go to Salem Boys Auto. My daughter actually took pictures. A lady from across the street in Honeywell, very nice lady, came over to the shop, no appointment, and just kind of walked in. And she says, "You guys, I hear meowing underneath my car." And Andy, my daughter, who's a soft-hearted animal lady, she says, "We'll bring it around here." And they lift it up, and in the shroud underneath the exhaust is three kittens. So we pull them out, and we're giving them love and everything, and the guys are trying to decide who's going to get the three kittens. Well, the lady says, "I need to take those, but my question is did I bring them from home, or did I find them at work?" So we agreed she drove a long way, so it's not likely that they wouldn't have burnt to death from her catalytic converter because they were there. So we thought, okay, you had to have picked these up from the parking lot over there at Honeywell. So I think what happened is she let them go and hoped that the mother would find them, and she parked in exactly the same spot. So the answer to your question, we find straws, we find cigarettes, we find ink pens, and we found a mouse or two, but you're right. That's just something that's lots of fun to do, but the worst part about it is if he's dead, you would have picked up the problem by the noise and the smell. And when we call you and say, "Well, we pulled the dead rat out of your fan motor, and the place stinks pretty good, but maybe you stop by the car wash and have them deodorize your car or something," because there's nothing we can do about that. But anyway, thank you for making me laugh. Thank you.
Yeah.
All righty. Okay, we got a rat in fan. Let me tell you what we have. Up at the barn, my wife in her workshop, she has one of my horse stalls. In her workshop, there was these little plastic things of nails that would disappear. And then there was one of these long things that you start your fireplace with where you pull the trigger, chick, 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 and it has a flame on the end of it. It was missing. So her gloves, her plastic gloves started missing. So she's, nah, 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 nah. I said, "Look, this whole place is a mess. God knows where this guy's at." She goes, "Well, it's here." And so we disassemble this half of this wall, and we pull this chest of drawers out, and on the back of it is a piece of cardboard, and at the bottom of it is a hole about the size of a 50-cent piece. Take the cardboard back off of this dresser that she used to put on, and there's half of her stuff is there. We sweep it all out and stuff. So I take a piece of quarter-inch plywood, put down there, set it on the ground. Now there's no way. So that we think he's gone. So the other day she says, "The trap that you put in there with the bottle, soda bottle with peanut butter all over the top of it, somebody ate the peanut butter and ate the soda bottle." So I get out the game camera, and I hang the game camera up that looks at this area. So we go out there 2 or 3 days later, and yeah, the peanut butter's kind of gone. We're thinking it's a raccoon or something. It's a 5-gallon pail. It's got a metal shaft that runs through, you know, a third of the pail. On there is a plastic water jug where I've drilled a hole on each end, and then I cover it with peanut butter. Now, I put a ramp up to that with just a piece of wood. So the mouse or the rat, and I got this from an old cowboy, the mouse or the rat crawls up, and he reaches over, and he's going to eat the peanut butter. Him or her is going to eat the peanut butter on the plastic jug. So they reach over, and they put their hands on the plastic jug, but it spins, they drop into the water, and they go to mouse heaven. So we're trying to figure this out. There's this doggone rat that jumps onto this, then jumps onto that, then goes over, and on the edge of the shelf, he leans over and eats the doggone peanut butter. He never falls into the bucket. So we've rearranged the bucket to where he can't get on that shelf, and sooner or later we'll get him. But meanwhile, we're having to deal with, I think it's 2 foot of rat poop, and I have to deal with my wife. So if you want a drawing on that mouse catcher, it's not something, I think it's kind of humane. They don't last long, but it works really, really well. And one of the ranchers up here says he hasn't seen a mouse in years, and he put 3 or 4 of those buckets out. So if you've got mice in your house, then mark at marksalem.com. You got anybody in the wings?
Nope, lines are open.
All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. Folks, I talk about our industry sometimes in negative ways, but I'm just kind of giving you the other point of view. There's no question that I don't have 100% of my customers are happy with me or my staff or the work we've done. There's no question that sometimes I've been accused of fixing the wrong thing and all that other kind of stuff. And there's no question that we've damaged cars either. The idea is that what I try to avoid is taking advantage of you or creating the perception that you need to have this done or your car's going to hate you or you need to have this done and your car will love you and all that other stuff that goes along with that. There was a thing back in the 70s and the 80s where this PCV valve, the PCV valve is called a positive crankcase ventilator. There's lots of fumes inside the engine of your car, so we're going to suck those out of the engine, and we're going to burn them again, and they provide an additional source of power. So it's kind of like adding another carburetor, so to speak. So we have a vent on one side of the engine to where we filter the air, and it gets sucked into this side of the motor. Then the other side of the motor is the vacuum cleaner, and it sucks it out and puts it back into the top of the carburetor. Boom, we're done. So this guy came out with this PCV valve, and this PCV valve would add 10% to your mileage. So you'd cut the PCV valve hose, and you'd install this little gizmo. I have one in my desk drawer. And then there's this little bleed valve, and you just open up the bleed valve. Well, all we were doing is causing the car to run lean. We were adding an additional source of air, unmetered air, to the engine. And when we do that, the fuel stays the same, and we're supposed to have 14 to 1 or something like that. And let's pretend it is 14 to 1. So we have 14 parts of air to one part of gas. Now we have 15 parts of air or 16 parts of air, but in a carbureted car, that one part gas stayed there. Fuel injection car is a completely different animal. So people were selling this, and there was some chain stores in this town that were selling these like you can't believe, and here's why. I don't remember exactly, but this is an exaggeration, so I'll tell you in advance. We bought them for $2 a piece, and we sold them for $29.95. That was the reason. And it took us about 2 seconds to install. Thank you. We're done. Cut the hose, plug, and we're done. So those are the kinds of things I want you to watch out for. The nitrogen on your tires. I've told you why. The fancy oil additives. Throw your oil out of specification. So Mobil, Shell, Phillips, and Chevron, who make every oil that's in every car in the United States, they're saying our oil is specifically down to the thousands of a drop. And when you add an oil additive to it, you throw the entire oil out of specification. So therefore, it can not protect certain parts of your engine because you've just contaminated the mix. I believe that. I agree with that. I've been trained well by Valvoline and Chevron. That's the truth. So those are the kinds of things I just kind of prepare you for. Watch your owner's manual. Do the maintenance in your owner's manual. Don't let anybody talk you into deviating from what the manual says. Don't let anybody talk to you or talk you out of ignoring what your owner's manual says. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Thank you for tuning in. And we have open lines available, although we have Peter on the line. I'm going to get to him in just a second. If you'd like to join us and have a car question, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And we're going to be here for another hour, so you've got plenty of time. And I can usually handle about 5 to 8 callers an hour. And so you got a good chance to get in. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in the Phoenix area since 1968. They know how to work on transmissions. If you go up and down Washington Street at 40th Street in Washington on the north side of the road, you'll see Automatic Transmission Exchange. They've been around a long time. It's nice to call them gray-haired or silver-haired, but the bottom line is there's a lot of experience underneath the roof of that building. And when you learned how to work on computers at the very beginning of the Apple IIe, then when you get into Microsoft Windows 10, you probably got a good handle on it. It's the same way in transmissions. If you know what we used to shift them with throttle pressure, fluid pressure, with vacuum, and now we shift them with electronic components, then it's easy still to diagnose and repair a car. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Peter, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hi there, Mark. I usually listen to your program every week whenever I can.
Thank you.
And I'm a car guy, a hot rodder. I'm about 68. But I've been through a lot. I've been, done a couple of hot rods and so on. But I have a 2014 Honda Accord. When I had 20,000 miles on the car, the transmission started giving some funny noises whenever I came to a stop. The dealership was kind enough to replace the transmission for no charge. Right now, the car has 105,000 miles on it, so I have about 85,000 miles on that new transmission. And when I was listening last week to your program, you guys were laughing about the CVT, and it just won't last over 120,000 without a rebuild. And so my question to you is, how likely is it that I really would need a transmission rebuild?
Well, let me ask you a couple questions. Was this noise exactly what you had before?
And no more noise. I have no noise anymore.
I know, but was the noise that you had was fixed by the new transmission? Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I think you owe it to them to go tell them this story. I think whether I think this is a bad transmission or not, Peter, that's not fair because I don't know. But if you were, and first of all, we're very close in age. So don't, you know, you and I both have our Medicare cards in our wallets. And so I used mine at Walmart the other day for identification. I had left my wallet and I had just like $20. And I was buying my wife this keg of beer. And she says, I need identification. I said, well, it's out in the truck and look at me. I mean, come on. She says, I need identification. I pull out and I say, here. She says, okay, thank you. She walked away. So nevertheless, I don't know the answer to that, but I think if you go in nice and you say, this is what happened, and you fixed my problem, and I seem to have the same noise and the same problem now, would you be kind
of... No, excuse me. You got it wrong. I do not have any more noise.
Oh.
It's still running well.
Okay.
But anticipating the fact that when another, say, I have 85,000 now on it. Maybe another 10,000 miles. And I put a lot of mileage these days because I drive my wife back and forth to work.
Okay.
So within another 3-4 months, I'm going to be right there about 115,000, 120,000.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be valid. First of all, I'm going to take it by your age that you're not out squealing the tires on your Honda and you're not driving it. And most of the time, 90% of the time, you could drive with a hot cup of coffee, a full hot cup of coffee between your legs and not burn yourself because you drive like an idiot. So the answer
to your... on on-ramps.
Okay. All right. So you had a lid on it during the on-ramps.
I did go through a couple of 20 years ago, I guess. I went to the Bondurant School of High-Performance Driving. And so, I know how to drive fast.
Oh, I know, but it's not likely that you're driving like my 18-year-old grandson. You know what I mean?
No.
So I don't know, but here I can tell you this much. Usually there's going to be symptoms. And that will give you plenty of warning. Usually, the transmission's not going to give you symptoms on Mondays and failed on Wednesdays. It's going to give you symptoms early October, and if you ignore the symptoms, it's going to die 2 or 3 months later. So, you'll get warning. If I were you, I wouldn't base the decision on what I've heard stupid guys like Mark Salem saying that they don't normally. Because I want to tell you something. Peter, honest to goodness, we used to replace automatic transmissions, at 60, 70,000 miles all the time. In Chevys, Fords, Hondas, Toyotas, Chryslers, everything. Today, it's not uncommon for us to have automatics to go to 150 to 200. Now, if you ask me today, I'm going to say most people are going to have a transmission by 150. But we've got all kinds of customers. We got customers in 400,000 miles that haven't replaced their engine yet. So I think I want you to worry about something else. I don't want you to worry about this. I just want you to, and if you want, send me the money for the new transmission, and then I'll just hang on to it, and then I'll pay for it when you need it, okay?
Yeah, because my wife said if it's going to fail, we better go and change the car, get another car.
Okay, but I'm telling you to tell her 99% of the time there'll be symptoms that will allow you plenty of time to decide what to do.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Okay, you betcha.
And this is a great program you got there.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that. Thank you. And, yes, us old guys, we stick together, by the way. Kurtz Auto Repairs at I-17 in Bell. I want you to know, I know all these guys. It's not like they're paying me to tell you about them. I know them. I have their cell phones. I've met their wives. We've talked dirty to one another on the phone. We've had beers together. We just share a common idea that we can be a little better than the average shop just by keeping our nose clean. So Kurtz is a good guy. Kurtz is a master tech. It's kind of like having people that have master's degree in auto repair. Kurt has one, Jeff has one, Eric has one. All three of those. When I have them on the radio, ooh-wee, they can knock it out of the ballpark almost because of the three of them. You got three heads are better than one. So if you're anywhere near I-17 and Bell and you don't have a shop, may I suggest that you try Kurtz Auto Repair, northeast corner, I-17 and Bell, been in business since 1987 and works on both gas and diesel. All right, I want to talk to you about something else that's on my mind. Along the same vein, I don't tell you to go somewhere to have your car fixed. If you don't have a shop, if you're happy with your shop, by all means, stay there. I don't tell you to go somewhere because it's lucrative for me. I want to tell you that's where I send my mother. My mother's passed, but that's where I would send my mother. I would send everybody I know that I love and respect and care for, I would send them to the shop. So let me give you a good example. One of my employees wrecked my truck a couple weeks ago. And it's a one-ton dually, my Dodge. And they pretty much wiped off the left rear fender by cutting the corner too close about the end of the building. And so I had to have the fender put on. It's not a bolt-on apparatus. You have to weld the bedside on. So I took it to Phoenix Body Works. I took it there because that's who I advertise. I didn't take it there because I wanted a discount, and I told them I'm paying a regular price. I'm not going to report it to my insurance company. I'm going to pay for it myself. The bottom line is that I practice what I preach. If my mother lived up at I-17 in Bell, she'd go to Kurtz. If my dad lived up on the east side of town in Mesa, he'd go to Thompson's Auto Repair. So I'm sending people to the place that's suited best for them. And in reality, I don't do it for any other reason other to pay you back from all your patronage of our radio show. We've been on this radio show since 1988. Not on this station, but we started on this station in 2011. So we've been here 8 years. In that period of time, my before life at the other radio station, we did about 3 calls an hour. On here, we're averaging north of 12 calls a show, and we've hit as many as 20 calls in a show in a two-hour period. And I had a two-hour show then, too. So we went from 3 or 4 an hour to 7, 8, 9, 10 an hour. And it's because we just have a better audience, and I like you guys a lot better than the young bucks that wanted to call me and argue with me a lot. I'd much rather just you give me the symptoms, I ask questions, and then we both talk about it, and I do the best I can to guess about it. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. People always say they want OEM parts. I want you to put Motorcraft in my car. I want you to put General Motors in my car. Okay, well, let me tell you something. There's a company called Dorman, D-O-R-M-A-N. This is not a commercial. Dorman takes parts that are defective, and they make them new and better. So read this. There's a problem with the original equipment intake manifold on a Chevy Cruze, and there's a faulty PCV valve design, positive crankcase ventilation.
2 minutes.
So we have a new intake, and we have a video and notes to help you install this redesigned parts and address the related failures. Okay, here's another one. And I love reading these things. When you lose the remote on your car, it's going to cost you a lot of money to fix that. But now they have a three-button keyless remote for Nissan and Infiniti vehicles, but it comes with its own programmer, so you don't need to spend $100 to have somebody make those fobs work on your car. It has a programmer. So basically, you read the directions, and you'll need your wife to do that, because us guys, we know it all already. The fact of the matter is This allows you to program three new remotes to your car by yourself. Okay, the blend door on the Jeep Cherokee, it breaks, and we have to go and just take your entire front dashboard. We take the steering column, we take the two front seats, and we take it from side to side, the steering or the whole dashboard out. Let me read what it says. The blend door repair kit for the Jeep Grand Cherokee allows the blend door to be fixed without removing the part. This bulletin explains the proper procedure for cutting open the original housing and installing the repair shaft and then putting it all back together. Uh-huh. Big savings there. And I'm not going to use Jeep parts. A couple more here that I think are pretty great. Jeep Cherokee, Mercedes-Benz, and the variety of diesels. This fix has a manifold adjuster repair kit that causes a common failure of the original equipment plastic adjuster rod, and we replace the plastic adjuster rod with a stronger aluminum adjuster rod. Folks, that's going to be cheaper, I promise you. And last but not least, on the Toyota Sienna, fixing a worn wheel bearing usually requires a difficult procedure using the shop press or purchasing multiple components. That's true. We're going to say the whole assembly. We have remade the entire assembly. So we've got the upper control arm or the strut mount, the lower ball joint, the tie rod end, and all the new bearings. We're going to sell you everything. Got one more for you here. I love these. The Toyota Camry, Corolla, the Matrix, and the Solera. This CV axle bearing bracket is quality engineered to support the CV shaft bearing and made of high-quality cast iron for increased durability and a longer life. Basically, they're replacing a really poorly made, probably some plastic part, and they're replacing it with something that's metal that you can replace and use again. So this is the kind of stuff that when you say you want parts from the dealership, which, by the way, were never made by the Chevrolet, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, whatever, they don't have, they have the parts made offshore, and they're shipped to Mexico, and when that your car is assembled in Mexico. So you're not, there's no such thing as a Motorcraft factory that makes Motorcraft brake pads. They buy probably from Bendix or Continental or something like that, Raybestos. So that's kind of how it works. Anyway, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you're welcome to join me. The lines are wide open. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we're going to talk to Dennis real quick. Dennis, how can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Enjoy your show. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Mark, I've got a 2001 Pathfinder. I have an ignition coil problem. I had a P1320 come up in the codes, and then it switched to a misfire in the cylinder number 5. I replaced the coil for the 5th cylinder and the plug, and about 60 miles later, it all of a sudden switched to the same code, 1320, and now it switched to P301. The 1 cylinder is misfiring. Any troubleshooting, something I could just, I don't want to replace the number 1 coil if it's something else. Do you have any ideas of what it could be?
Well, you got the new in 5, right?
Right.
Why don't you put the new in 1 and put 1 in 5?
Number 1 coil is different than the other one.
Okay.
When I went to the, it's got a different, it fits into the same, you know, but it's, when I was buying the parts, they said the number 1 coil is different than the other five.
That's fine. I understand that. So let me ask you a question. Is the coil sit on top of the spark plug?
Yes.
Okay, so there's no cable between the coil and the plug.
No.
Okay. On the bottom of the coil, is there like looks like a piece of black windshield washer hose or a fuel line hose? That's called the boot that transfers the electronic spark and it allows the spark.
Yeah, it does have a boot.
Okay.
Yeah, it does have a boot.
Did you replace the boot?
Yes.
Okay. Did you use dielectric?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I don't know what to tell you. The idea is, and here I'm going to think out loud. If you're running lean, then a misfire would be part of that. But if you're running lean, the O2 sensors would be yakking. So I wouldn't be really worried about a misfire if I had a lean O2 sensor. I'd fix the lean O2 sensor problem first, and not the vacuum leak, the EGR that's stuck open, the blend door where the vacuum line fell off, all that kind of stuff. So I don't really, you know, can you swap the spark plugs? Can you take 5 and move it to 4 and put 4 into 5?
Sure. Okay. I can do that.
If you're going to do this yourself, you need, and then you got to clear the code, and then you got to drive it, and then you got to get the code. And I think after a while there'll be a pattern, and I think you'll be able to go, okay, this seems to be a spark. Because if you move the spark plug only to number 4, and the problem now moves to 4, then maybe a couple of spark plugs would do you good. So
you know what? I had the spark plugs changed less than like 6,000-7,000 miles, and when I checked the one that went out and I replaced it anyway, they looked practically brand new.
Well,
and they weren't fouled or anything else.
I understand that, but spark plugs break down on the porcelain. Spark plugs will break down deep within the inside where you can't see them. There's all kinds of things that spark plugs will lose continuity. And it's hard to tell. The days of pulling a spark plug out and having it oil fouled or having it fuel fouled, those are gone. We pull spark plugs out that, for all intents and purposes, look just fine, but that cleans up a misfire code. So you got a code that's moving around. So, at the default, if you want to do like everybody else does, go buy 5 or 6 new spark plugs and 6 new boots and 6 new coils. Here's the problem. If you still have a lean code, and that lean code's moving around from cylinder to cylinder, then we need to find out what the lean code is. And a lean code you got a misfire code, but the question then becomes, is the misfire too much fuel or too little fuel? And typically it's too little fuel. So
wouldn't it come up on my codes on the scanner?
No,
it only comes with misfire. It won't. Okay.
Yeah, the computer's capable of dumping 5-10 codes in your lap, but I can answer your question after the car is fixed. Why did I only get a misfire code and not a lean code? Well, here's the reason why. So you answer that question, but you have to fix it first. What part of town do you live in? I'll guide you to somebody if you decide.
I'm in Surprise.
Okay. You can go to S&S Tire and ask them, because they do all kinds of auto repair, are you the best guy for this? Or, better yet, who would you use if I was your... First of all, do you love your father? Yes. Then who would you use or who would you send your dad to? And so that's what I would do. I would talk to the local shop and say... And you could call 2 of them and say, hey, who would you use for a performance problem? Call a transmission shop. Call S&S. They may very well say, and I think they do, we have a really good technician that's really good with diagnostics of the what we call flywheel to crankshaft pulley, you know, flywheel to dampener, which is just the engine. He doesn't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you just move some of the spark plugs around and the boots around and stuff like that, I think you'll be better off to decide what to do. And if you use light dielectric, that's a good idea. By the way,
so the first thing you do is go ahead.
Go ahead.
So the first thing, I should just swap the plugs as a last resort before I take it in.
Well, what happens if you get a number 6? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I see. Then most likely it's the lean, something in the lean.
It could be. It could be. But it can also be, I'm thinking out loud here, I would think you'd have a crank sensor or a cam sensor code if all of a sudden the ignition system went bonkers for a split second. And then the computer interpreted that as a misfire. So, I don't know the answer. Again, all those kinds of questions will be answered by the time somebody, somebody fixes it. If you want, on that side of town, I probably go to Harker's. I'd probably go 38th Avenue and Indian School. I'd maybe wait till it gets a little worse. Maybe wait till it throws more codes or something like that. But Bob and Jeremy,
it messes pretty bad though.
Okay. Let me give you an analogy, okay?
2 minutes.
There's no doctor that works from the top of your head from a hair transplant all the way to your toenails. There's no doctor. They're all specialists. But if I sent you to a kid who passed every single ASE test there is, and he's one of 2 or 3 in the whole United States that's capable of that, I'm sending you to Jeremy over at Harker's Auto. And him and Bob is his father-in-law, between Jeremy and Bob, they have the tenacity of a bulldog.
And I'll give you a good example. Not too long ago, somebody came in and they said, hey, I got this huge estimate from the import auto dealership, and every once in a while there's water that sprays out of my air conditioning vents. But it's once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So it was I think it was $1,300. So they said, well, just drop it off and let us know. At the very bottom of the evaporator case where this cold evaporator's at, we blow air through the evaporator and blow it into your vents. There's a drain at the bottom. It's a rubber drain. So they lift it up in the air and they look up in there and they can look up the drain. And they go, phew. So this is kind of stupid, but I think it's funny. So they take this coat hanger and they stick it up in there and they kind of wiggle it around. And when they pull the coat hanger out, they're covered in yucky water. The drain was plugged up. That's all there was. So they fixed it. So then they took their electric lawn blower, leaf blower, and they put duct tape all over all but one vent. They stick the electric blower up there, and they fill and charge it, and then they watch the vent, and pretty soon all the crap comes out and all the water comes out. They're done. They wrap it up and give it to the customer. So those are the kinds of things. I'm sending you to the best guy I know. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm up against a break, and I'll be back in about 7 minutes. Alrighty, 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we still got time. If you'd like to call and ask a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I was wrong last week. I was wrong. Really, really wrong last week. Last week, a guy called up, and he had a CVT transmission, constant velocity transmission. And he said inadvertently somebody had put a quart of normal automatic transmission fluid. And I said to him, there's a ratio here, 1 to 5, 1 to 7, 1 to 8, something like that. So I don't think that's a big deal. So within minutes after I got off the air, the owner of a local transmission shop calls me, and this is what he said. Hey, Mark, you missed it. CVT transmissions work with very high pressure and extreme heat. And regular automatic transmission fluid will fail quickly in that transmission. So it's too late to fix the mistake, so I thought I'd do it this week when we're likely to have the most amount of callers. So I called Alger and I said to him, did you know this is like a 1 to 6, 1 to 7, 1 to 8 ratio? And he goes, oh, I missed that, but he said still. And I said, so would you have told him to change the fluid? And he goes, probably not for 1 out of 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 quarts, but if they filled it up more than that, then I'd say, yeah, let's get the fluid out. So I was wrong. I knew that CVTs were very high pressure and had extreme heat problems of the fluid. That's just the way they are, and I think that has a lot to do with how long they live, and people don't change their transmission fluid like they should, and the CVT is something that you really have to do based on the manual and stuff. So, yep, I was wrong. I was wrong about that, and I can assure you when I'm wrong, there's a bunch of guys that have my cell phone number, and here's what I do between you and me. I don't watch my cell phone during the show. I mute it and I turn it face down because I can't be focused if all the guys I know are sending me nasty messages, nasty pictures, or condemning me or criticizing me or telling me I've lost it or whatever. So those are the kinds of things that happen behind the scenes. With the car repair industry, it's important for you to know that the shops that perhaps don't have your best interest in heart have a habit that you should recognize of every time you come in with your car, there's that proverbial laundry list of stuff with good reason why you should do it. Mr. Salem, you've got 135,000 miles on this car, and it's just time for the transmission to fail. But if you let me flush the transmission and clean your injectors and readjust your rearview mirror and flush out your fuel tank, I can make that transmission go longer. I'm being ridiculous, but if you're hearing that a lot, no one has a crystal ball in my industry, and if they do, it's a fake one. We don't know when things are going to fail. There's a case right now, a legal case I'm working on, and the argument is did the driver replace the part at the necessary interval? And the answer to that is there is no interval. There's no interval on your water pump. There's no interval on your alternator or your battery or your air conditioning compressor. There's no intervals on your shock absorbers front and rear. There's no intervals on, the ignition coil, the distributor, the crankshaft sensor, the camshaft sensor. All of those parts are replaced when symptoms dictate it.
2 minutes.
So this drive shaft issue is real simple. There is no specific time frame. I don't care what anybody says. There's no one that has an owner's manual that can show me, it says, to replace your drive shaft at 100, 150, 200, 250, 300. There's nothing. There's nothing like that. It's not there. So it's kind of important when you look at the big picture to decide, are they really capable of telling me and looking into the future and telling me what's going to go wrong? Now, there's a difference. Your brakes are metal to metal. Okay. Then you say, well, what symptom are you going to fix? And they go, well, there has to be some grinding. When you apply the brakes, there has to be, instead of seamless, quiet slowdown, it's grinding. Yeah, it does. Okay, well, that's the symptom I'm going to fix. But if they say, I need to flush the back of your intake valves, and it's a proven dynamic that we should do it, and you should love it, and your car will love you more, that's the real one that I hate, then the question is what symptom do I have today that you're going to fix? Well, it's going to happen. Well, I know, but I'm going to die too. And so I don't want to speed that process up, and I can guarantee you, Mr. Auto Mechanic Guy, that you don't know when my engine's going to die. Unless, of course, you know it's going to die in the next hour, and that's about it. So it's kind of an interesting dialogue because we do what your doctor doesn't get to do. He can't tell you to go have your appendix out because sooner or later you'll need them and all that other kind of stuff. But the best they can do is tell you every 5 years to get a colonoscopy, and most of us don't listen to them anyway. So anyway, 602-508-0960. We've got 20 minutes left in the show. You're welcome to call in if you have a car question or a car problem. Now is the time. Or if you want to criticize me, knock yourself out. 602-508-0960. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here every Saturday from 10 to 12 talking about car and car repair problems. And we're going to go to Leonard because he called in. Leonard, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Mark, I check my oil in the morning overnight when the engine's cold. And I noticed that I checked it recently that the thing is overfilled. It's about 3/4 of an inch above the flow mark. Is that a concern?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not something you need to call a tow truck driver and, have it towed to the shop or anything like that. And you're sure the car's on level ground and it's at least 3/4 of an inch above the full?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
My concern is beat that up into a froth.
And that's exactly right. And it will build internal pressure that we don't expect. There's a lot of us that have a tube that will stick down the dipstick tube and just suck out some oil. Some of us will put it on the rack and just pull the drain plug and then let it sit and stuff like that. Who did the last oil change?
A local shop.
Okay. Why not just, not on a Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons, but why don't you just call them and ask them to make an appointment? And if you walked up to my counter and you said, I know you guys don't make mistakes, and I've been doing business with you for a long time, but I've just been checking my oil lately, and it's a good half an inch above the full mark. And I was just wondering, if you take my word for it that it's a half an inch, of course, it may not show that now, but can you guys just drain off a half a quart for me, please? And you know what? If you were that kind of my staff, if they did anything but just stop the whole train and get your butt in there and drain that oil, verify that they screwed up, and then after you leave, then we're going to have a talk with the technician that did the oil change last, and we're not going to beat him or fire him or anything like that, and we're going to find out that he was just too lazy to put 4.5 in there, and he put 5, and he shouldn't have. So
that's what it calls for, 4.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I look at the repair order, and they charge for 5 quarts, so maybe they just put the whole 5 quarts in there.
Well, and I'm going to tell you something. We do that, and I'll tell you why. Our software doesn't allow us to put 4.5. It only lets a whole number. So we have one, we can put one number in, which is 1 through 9. If we have a 12-quart system, oftentimes we have to charge 9, and then we have to charge 3. There's a lot of old software out there that prevents that from happening, but I got to tell you something. There's no way we can keep track of every technician that works for us, but I think your request is reasonable. I think you'll find out how much they value you as a customer. Because if they walk out to the parking lot and pull your stick and say, oh, come on, Leonard, that's not, you're saying, wait a minute, I told you cold, I told you level every morning. But if you don't want to do it, that's okay. I probably should look for another shop anyway. Would you tell Mark, I said I'm kind of disappointed in your service, and thank you very much, young man. Shut the hood and get the hell out of there. That's what I'd do.
Right.
All righty.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much.
I appreciate
your time.
Okay. You know what? There's no filter on my mouth. There just isn't. There just isn't a filter. And you get what you deserve, and I am not shy about telling people that they've done a great job, and I'm not shy about raising my hand. Anyway, real quick, let me tell you about a couple of shots. On that North I-17 corridor, you got Action Auto, you got Phoenix Body Works, and you got Strictly Diesel. I promise you. They know one another, they don't badmouth one another, they trust one another, and they're all in different work. So you've got Action Auto Repair, northwest corner of Deer Valley and I-17, does tremendous full auto care. Now, when we say full auto care, we mean we're not going to rebuild your transmission, we're going to get another one, but it's full auto care. Tom's a really great guy, been around since 1983, and I've known Tom since the early 80s. So Action Auto Repair is a great place. Then just down the road, you got Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. He's a good guy. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road just east. They get along, and they can work on diesels like nobody else. We're talking about just regular diesel, both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. So your Ford, your Dodge, your Chevrolet, there's some other domestic and import diesels that he does. But he's a good guy. And then you got Phoenix Body Works on Deer Valley and 19th. Those guys all depend on one another. They're all really good friends, and they're not going to badmouth other shops because they're better than that. So don't forget, Action Auto, northwest corner of Deer Valley and I-17. Then you got Strictly Diesel. He's at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road just east. Two good shops. Who we got, Gil?
We have Corky.
Corky, good morning.
How you doing this morning?
I'm good. Thank you.
Question for me is, I have a 2016 Toyota Hybrid RAV4, and the tires need to be replaced. I took it into the tire place 2 years ago when one tire went had a blowout in it,
uh-huh.
And they said I needed 4 new tires. So I said, okay, I put in 4 new tires, 60,000-mile tires. At 30,000 miles, the tires are down to the wear treads. So they're going to give me some money for that. But the question is, do you really need to change all 4 tires when you have a problem with the one tire?
I'm going to change your question just slightly. Mark, I have 2-wheel drive, front wheel or rear wheel.
It's a RAV4 hybrid, all-wheel drive.
Okay, then yes, you have to do them all. I was going to draw that distinction.
You have to do them all.
Yeah, because we need all 4 tires to have the same rolling circumference. So if one of them is 100 inches and the other is 90, the computer's not going to like that. So the answer is you got to do all 4. When you have an all-wheel drive car, you have to do all 4.
Well, you know, when the guy told me that initially, I said, okay, and I did it. Now I'm back into the same place because they're going to warranty the 30,000 miles of tread that it didn't have on it. And the guy said, oh, no, you don't have to do that. If it's got, if it's a couple thousandths or a couple, whatever, under, you're fine, no problem.
Okay.
I said, that ain't what I've been told.
Well,
I've been told. So they're probably lying.
Well, I would have been there and he would have said that, and I go, thousandths of an inch? Thousandths? A hair is 3/1000ths of an inch thick. That's a red hair is 3,000. So show me the equipment you have that marries that measures thousands of an inch. And young man, let's do this. What's that mathematical equation? Circumference times what equals diameter? How does that work? So the circumference times pi is your diameter.
Right.
So, and then the circumference, is it like from the ground to the top of the tire? Or do we lift the tire off the ground and go from the bottom of the tire to the top? What you were told is just ridiculous. And he should have just apologized. You should. I hope you reminded him that it is an all-wheel drive. And if he kept going, he's just one of those people that he's just going to not let people talk down to him. And he's a know-it-all. Let me ask you, is this a chain store?
Yes.
Okay. I want to tell you, I already know who it is. Because of their customer service, they're going to give you back, and you'll probably get 50%. The cost will be 50% of what you paid for the four new ones, because in reality, you got 30 out of 60. I think that the management of that facility or of those facilities would be kind of disenchanted with that kind of a conversation, but it could be that it's a brand new employee, and it could be that he answered the phone or he met you at the counter, and it could be that he wasn't supposed to be on the counter, blah, blah, blah. But I can tell you this much. Right. I know the people that own and run it. I know the attorneys that defend them and all that kind of stuff. And these people are the best people in the world. They're just the best people in the world. They have parameters they're allowed to do. It's all about customer service. They know right from wrong. And I'll tell you, even more important, it's kind of close to my heart. My son started working there right out of high school. And when he finally came to work for his dad with a full-blown, you know, shop, he brought skills that I never had. And we sell a lot of tires, and he now has morphed into this giant diesel facility, and tires is a major portion of his work. And he can actually tell you what the circumference of the tire, because he knows the mathematical equation based on the size of the tire.
Now, let me ask you a question. I'm not going to name it, but does any of the, is the last thing, or the name of the chain?
Say it again.
Is the last letter of the chain an O?
No.
No. Okay. Well, that's where I'm at.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about.
No, I thought you were talking about Discount Tire.
Right. I know, and I trust those guys.
So if you have your chance to upgrade, what brand did you put on it? Do you remember right now? What do you got?
They put on Coopers. Now they're going to put on Big O's.
Okay. It's up to you. I sell a heck of a lot of Toyos. Yeah. Everybody that's got silver or gray hair goes, oh, that's a Japanese tire. No, it isn't. It's made in Atlanta, Georgia. Why Toyo? Because we've had really good luck with Toyo. Well, why Toyo? Because when we ask them for a favor, we don't ask them for a favor every day, every week, every month. But when we ask them a favor for a really good customer, they accommodate us. But they say, Mark, if you want a favor, then you pay half and we'll pay half. Because you can't come with your hand out and the palm up expecting us to pay for the baby that you had a part of making. That's a crude analogy.
Now, that all being said, go ahead.
I sell lots of Toyos, and I know that Discount Tire sells Toyos.
Right. So here's what I want to say. Two things. Attaboys to you. I was listening to your show. I listen to it every Saturday. And you talked about you fixed a guy's power door window by banging on the side of the door panel. So sure enough, the next day, my freaking window wouldn't go up. So I go out there and bang on it. Damn, it went right up. That Mark guy's pretty smart. That's number one.
Go ahead.
And number two was I'd called in about my Jeep Cherokee, not when it got real hot and was missing. And you guys said, what's the fuel level, you know? And I said, well, it was like a quarter. Just put gas back in it, fill it up. And that solved the problem.
Yeah.
Instead of putting a $1,000 fuel pump in it.
In my defense and everybody else's that works in the car repair industry, I get to do what few others choose to do or are allowed to do. I get to ask questions. I get to ask those questions to help me hone in, and I'm only as good as the answers you give me, because there's three answers, yes, no, or I don't know. And I don't get a lot of I don't knows. I get a lot of guesses. But, folks, what he's talking about is there. I always tease my buddies because all of them drive Fords, but all of them have hit their heads. They've played football and stuff like that. So the other day, a Ford truck, Daryl was complaining because his window didn't roll up. So I went outside, and I says, come on, guys, I'm going to fix it. And they're all going, you're going to pull the door panel? I said, I'm going to fix it. Come on out here. So we all have lunch together. We all go outside. And I said, okay, Daryl, you get in the driver's seat. Start the thing up. Hold the passenger window button down. No, up. It was stuck down. Push the button and hold it. So I walk over under the door, and I go this way. I hit it. Not enough to dent it, but I hit it good. And the window goes up, and the place just went crazy. And I said, okay, there, I fixed it. And he goes, well, how long's the warranty? And I said, about 10 seconds, because obviously the switch is bad or the motor's bad, but I think it's the motor. So I said to him, you owe me $1 for every window motor, or every time you diagnose a window problem on another Ford, you owe me $1. So I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks later, he walks in, and we're having lunch together, a bunch of us old guys, and he throws $1 on the table. And I said, what's that for? And he goes, I fixed a Ford. Now, it works on Hondas and Toyotas and everything else, but you're alluding to that. And it's a funny thing, but I'm tickled pink that you did it and it worked. And there is science behind it, but it's a diagnostic tool that takes you 2 seconds. You don't hit it hard enough to dent it, and it tells you the motor or a bad connection. You got to go into the door no matter what. So it's interesting. But thank you for that.
Hey, thank you for all your information, and I'm going to go back down and tell those guys you guys are full of crap.
I think you just go down there and say, I'd like to explore other brands of tires. I appreciate that you're going to give me a 50%, but I'd like to look at other brands of tires. I want to tell you real quick, because you're the only caller on the line. In our industry, do you have any idea in the auto repair industry what our net profit is? What portion of a dollar do we get to keep? And the answer I can tell you right now is 8 to 10 cents. There are places out there that have franchises, and they have a fee of 5%. So if a guy is only making 8 and he has a franchise fee of 5, then he's really only netting 3. And that sometimes creates the possibility of selling stuff that's not needed in order to make a fair and equitable profit. And that goes with franchise donut shops and everything else that's a franchise. There is a fee associated with that. So I'm cognizant of the fact, and people think, oh, I make $1 million every time I fix their car. I'm telling folks, I make 8, maybe 10, and sometimes 11 cents on every dollar I get to keep. Then I have to pay tax on that. So when you look at it, hopefully you're doing a little volume. We got to go. Thanks a lot. See you next week.